Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Hello, welcome to the Autocar Podcast, My Week in Cars with Matt Pryor over here. Steve Cropley over there. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, mate. How are you?
Very well, mate. I would think more rested than you are, because as we speak, it's first thing Tuesday morning. You have just come back from the Geneva Motor Show.
Yeah, I got back last night, but I had a lot of stuff. We're in my house, aren't we? I got back about, I don't know, 11 o'clock last night. There was a certain amount of chaos in the Geneva airport. And then I had to get up this morning, write a couple of news stories and the show report. So yeah. I'm well practiced on the typewriter.
Give me the show report then. What is there to report on this year's returning for the first time since 2019? What's there to report on the Geneva show?
It was better than I thought. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of cynicism going in. That, you know, there was some bloke. I went in with two other guys. Normally, there's a scrum to get in. You know, there's hundreds of people
queuing outside the door, waiting for the turnstiles to open.
We just walked in. And the guy that looks at your barcode on your pass was sort of almost grateful that we arrived. But I walked in with these two blokes. One of them said, "This is like a wedding rehearsal. You know, no commitment, no." You know, all the gubbins is here, but no actual substance. And the other fellow was a guy from Switzerland who was rather in downbeat way, saying that this is the last one and it's all finished and there won't be another one. Hmm. I don't know that that's true.
Okay.
But anyway, so we walked in. It's about an eighth the size of what it normally was.
It's a small show anyway, isn't it? Usually, it's a compact show. Small.
But all of Stellantis have 10-plus marks, don't they? Yeah. All missing.
Yeah.
No Germans. Mm-hmm. Nobody but Renault, BYD, MG, Dacia, obviously, and some small stuff. But quite a lot of... I was impressed, actually. I thought they'd done their best. And the place has always been well run, and it was... The decor was terrific. It had all been refreshed, I think, and... Mm. There were big displays of vintage cars and hypercars and so on, and the coffee shops were immense. Got plenty of space for them. But, you know, really good models, places to buy models and all that sort of thing. And Renault, because there was so much interest at Renault, the 5, and the place was knee-deep chest-deep in high-priced Renault executives. Mm. So there was plenty to do, I found it. I mean, there were various people sidling out at about 2 p.m., but I found it enjoyable, busy.
Yeah. So as a consumer, a casual public showgoer...
Yeah.
Still interesting to go to?
Well, I think if I were a local and I wanted something to do with my kids on Saturday afternoon, I'd go.
Yeah.
There's enough to see. Especially stuff that they won't have seen, you know, historic racing cars and, you know, sort of auction stuff. And but it was nothing like a proper motor show. It was a very well controlled and sort of nicely curated lash up.
Okay. Stellantis yesterday morning chose to release pictures of several new Fiats.
Yeah.
Do you think they chose yesterday morning to do that?
Deliberately.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Apparently, I was hearing about this. That was a bit of a talk in the as we were walking in. You know, the fact that they'd done this. Apparently, this is recent behaviour for Stellantis. They're very conscious of Renault and its apparent progress, and they seem to have a bit of a spoiler tactic. Renault had some fantastic financials to report a little while ago, and there seems to be a bit of a tendency for Stellantis to want to compete hard with Renault, you know, to issue news when they've got some. So it was absolutely deliberate, because apart from anything else, we already know that Fiat wants to celebrate the 125th anniversary with these very cars that it launched yesterday. So it could have done that, couldn't it? But when the financials came out a couple of months ago, Renault were cock-a-hoop because their best results ever. And there was mysteriously some Stellantis announcement that day as well.
So it was a thing to try and take some of the shine away from Renault, rather than a slight on the Geneva show itself. It wasn't Stellantis going, no, we want to jump on some of the Geneva bandwagon, but we don't want to spend £800 a night on a hotel for a minimum 10 nights, or give the show organisers £4 million.
No. Well, I don't know. It could have been, I think it was both things, because okay. Olivier Francois, the Fiat bloke, was purportedly made the announcement while walking around an Italian town called Ginevra. There's both things going
okay.
on. But I think, you know, there's still loads of people who are wounded by the fact that when Geneva went wrong 3 days to run in 2020, there were no refunds. You know, nobody got their hotel, or I don't know about nobody, but few people got their hotel deposits back, and so on and so on.
Yeah.
So it's still possible. There's a bloke I know in Ford who is unable to complete a sentence containing the word Geneva show without a bunch of expletives.
Yes, I know a couple of... I think I may know who you mean, but also I know a couple of other industry people who do feel similar. A sort of a certain lack of sympathy
Indeed.
For the plight of the Geneva show. But as a punter, as a showgoer, the old Geneva show was quite a nice place to go.
Oh, it was good.
As a car enthusiast, it's a good show to go.
It was a good time of the year to go to. Accessible.
Yeah.
Even-handed as well. You know, the French weren't, in a superior position to the Germans, and vice versa, as with other shows. No, I liked it. And, we had some good times there, didn't we?
Yeah.
You used to wander around making videos all the time.
Yeah. We did the 2020 video. We did it from the... our old photographic studio / warehouse / car storage remote office, instead of, because we were going to go to the show, and then 2 days before somebody went, no, you're not. So we went, oh, okay, well, all right, then we'll better just film all the cars that, you know, with pictures of all the cars that would have been there, and do it.
Probably worked out fine, did it?
No, it was fine, mate. Yeah, it was fine. Yeah. As a lot of people found, it was fine. Yeah, just as many people found out about the cars they were interested in, but they didn't have to go anywhere.
Could have COVID in the storeroom just as easy as you could
And it's Ballet not, Expert. You know what, it's, I don't know, a lot of manufacturers have found that you don't necessarily need all that stuff.
I think that's Geneva's big problem. One is still the sense of outrage, and also the fact that they've had whatever it is, 4 years practice at putting on their own separate events, and you don't have to be shouted down by some bloke with a microphone on the stand next door.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry to be said for that. I haven't done a letter yet, but you can write to us, autocar@haymarket.com. And Richard Turner has done with some very nice words about the pod, which is very kind. He says, the real reason for writing to you is to get you both out on the road. There is a lovely venue near me, just on the edge of the North Yorkshire Moors, which is becoming a venue for the motorist. It's called The Motorist, themotorist.com. But it isn't getting the coverage or prominence of the likes of Caffeine and Machine or Bicester, partly because it's not as popular yet, but also because it's quite a long way further north and for reasons that we live in the south, I suppose.
Yeah.
But we don't cover... I mean, it's funny, actually, I did a post on Instagram a few weeks ago about Caffeine and Machine's new place, which is going to be in the on the site of the old Westmeon Hut pub, which is sort of halfway between Petersfield and Winchester on the A272. And a lot of people commented on it. Why are there not places? Why are there not more places like this in the north? And I think actually the north probably is not as well served as the south and the Midlands for these places. But anyway, the motorist is up there. Richard says we should go. And he says, if you're filming on the North Yorkshire Moors or Northumberland, maybe, I guarantee a pit stop would be worth it. And we should go do a live recording in the pod or an evening with.
Oh,
I think he's right. Absolutely.
Oh, I'd love to. I do think he's right. There need to be more places. I mean, it's all about population density, isn't it? Yeah. But I tell you what, I had a look on the website. It looks amazing. Yeah. You know, there's a Lotus Cortina sitting there in the middle of a display in an Aston as well. They just seem to be parked there, lifted up off the ground with a bunch of, you know, I don't know, anoraks, hats, God knows what around them that you can buy.
Yeah, because I think it's a car show. I think it's a classic car dealer and showroom as well.
Okay.
I think. But also then, you know, hub attached as a place to go and visit.
Makes it nicer.
I like these places. I really like these places.
Well, the bikers do it well, don't they? Because you know, coffee at the local bike shop.
Mm.
That just seems to work well to me. I like all that.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a place on between me and you, actually, near Oxford, called J&S Motorcycle Clothing.
Yeah.
Just does gear. But it's got a cafe, you know, a trailer set up in the car park doing buns and burgers.
Yeah, I love it.
I might stop for lunch on the way
back. On the way back. Yeah.
I don't need any motorcycle gear, but I'll have a look round. And you never know. I might pick up some earplugs.
Yeah.
Something else.
Yeah.
Who knows? So, yeah. Yeah. Anyway, thank you, Richard. We'll take you up on that and we'll see you there. I did go past last week, nearby last week, but I didn't have time to stop because I went to the North Yorkshire Moors on Friday.
What do you think? We'd be allowed to do the pod there, wouldn't it?
Yeah, we'd do the pod there, couldn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll just...
Find a way to be there, I suppose.
Find a way to be there. It'd be nice to... I'm always tempted to say motorbike up there when it's a little warmer.
Given a month or two,
I took my bike out of storage over the weekend. That overstates what I did, really.
How was it?
I started it and rode it around my neighbour's field and then parked it near the garage door. But yeah, great. It's ready to go.
Knees and fingers?
Oh, well, I didn't go very far.
Oh, okay.
It was still, it's still a bit too chilly for me. Anyway, on with the pod. You've been to McLaren Technical Centre.
Yeah.
What's it like?
Well, it's just as fabulous as ever. I went there with our one colleague, a bloke reporter we work with, Johnny Bryce, and our job was to see the new Artura Spider, which is, you know, a very nicely designed lid-off type job with some rather clever aerodynamic tweaks, because if you think about it, when the lid comes off it settles on top of the very point of the engine cover where there's an engine heat vent.
Mm.
So if you cover that with a large composite panel, it can't breathe out as it were. So they've done some clever electronic aerodynamics to change it. And that was all explained to us by an excellent bloke called Matt Beale, the chief engineer, and Johnny's duly produced a story, and it was great. But it was just so fabulous to go there. It made me think of Ron Dennis all the time. Everybody knows him, and everybody thinks they know about him as well. But I think his actual significance in history isn't appreciated enough. To me, he's as good as Enzo Ferrari. Hmm. Same decisive person, same relentless lack of ability to stop, and of course, huge achievements.
Yeah, he's just started later, hasn't he?
Yeah,
that's it. You know, yeah. And actually, if you what is the difference between them in terms of the creation of the racing company and then the car company? There'd be a few decades.
Yeah.
So if you imagine that McLaren is effectively a few decades behind Ferrari in its story, you could see where they might be.
Yeah.
They might well be very competitive with each other at the time.
You're right. Yeah. And I mean, there's a parity on race wins and all that, isn't there?
Yeah.
And also, the other thing is when you go around, you know how you drive around a lake and look at that building. I tried to think of another car type building short of something like Wolfsburg, you know, Hitlerian building, and Mirafiori, which is a Mussolini type building. But there are no other sort of monuments to motoring like that.
Yeah.
Certainly not in the modern era. Mm. And it's going to live a long life, that place. Yeah. It's already, whatever it is, 10 years or something old. 20 years old.
20 years old, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And could have been opened yesterday.
Mm.
Amazing.
And also, I think it'll age well.
So do I.
You know, yeah. I think in 100 years' time, if it's still there, and, you know, it would be nice to think
so. It'll be phenomenal.
But it will still be extraordinary. There are great stories about it. Because Ron was so involved with it, wasn't he?
And sort of fetishist for detail.
That the tunnels underneath, going from one of the car parks into the building, they've got these sort of underground white tunnels, tiles across the floor. The width of the tunnel passageway is the right width that none of the tiles needed to be cut.
That's it.
Is that right?
And the same goes for the factory, I believe. The manufacturing.
Really?
Yeah, he made sure that... That there was no trimming of tiles. They had to be amazing bloke.
And then when you go in, you've gone in the grand entrance because you've driven around the lake up to the main door.
Well, I've done both.
But you've also done the other one where you go down into the tunnel, you go through and you come up in the lift to the sort of raised walkway area that's got a very long chrome handle railing that runs all, or not, probably not chrome, is it, but aluminium handrail. It runs all the way along pretty much the length of the building. My understanding is this, that I don't want any joins in that. I don't want there to be no joins. And somebody, we just physically can't make a piece this long, and he accepted one in the middle. And then there is a story which apparently isn't true. There's quite a lot of geese and stuff that hang around on the lake.
Oh.
And he is reputed, and apparently this is not true. There are some apocryphal stories and some that aren't true, where he's gone off on one during a meeting, and a goose has crapped on the window, basically. And he's gone, "Will somebody get out there and shoot those geese?" Apparently that's not true, but I wish it was.
And
the lights in the lake are exactly the same height as the water, aren't they? I think.
Yeah.
The lights that shine on the building.
That's it.
And they're bang on water depth.
I remember going there early on, and they were, you know, they're even more concerned about detail than you know, all the light switch detail, and the screws in the light switches had to be, you know, horizontal and horizontal.
Okay. Yeah.
And you looked through all these buildings, which were glass from about waist height upwards, and everything was uniform except for one. And it was, Adrian knew he was still working there, and the infamous drawing board was kind of above the level of everything else. Every other desk was uniform. Every light switch, blah blah blah.
Yeah.
But the drawing board was there. It was a fantastic sight.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant. You talked to Matt Beale, about bandwidth.
Well, you'll know more about this than me because you've driven many more McLarens than me. But I think this is. He talked about the. Making a car that's quiet and noisy when required, and a car that rides well but is still has fantastic body control, and a car that appeals to drivers of normal ability and pretty, you know, elevated ability. And that seems, I think they've succeeded with that already, but he was just talking about how they've done it some more. They've just worked hard to things like throttle response and the exhaust characteristics, so that when you're driving along in normal conditions, it doesn't rattle the crockery in the Vickers tea cupboard, but on the other hand, it can make a hell of a noise when you want to go around Silverstone Grand Prix circuit. Mm. And I mean, you'd say that, wouldn't you? The bandwidth's pretty good.
Yeah, I think the bandwidth is pretty good. Yeah, I enjoyed driving McLarens, and I like them a great deal. I like the lightness, and I like the steering. I think they've probably got the best power-assisted steering of any modern production car. Probably.
They fetish of theirs, isn't it?
They've retained hydraulic power assistance, haven't they? When everybody else has gone to electric. But I do wonder, on the bandwidth front, their cars have a lot of it. You know, you could cruise quite easily in one, but also they're quite good fun on a track and everything. But is there enough of a bandwidth across the model range in general?
Oh, that's a really good point.
And I don't... When you think of a Ferrari Roma has a very different character to a 296 GTB, which has a very different character to an 812, which is a very different character to a Pure Sangue. And one McLaren feels less dissimilar.
Yeah, we had an Artura and a 750S parked together in the British Motor Museum the other day, you know, a month or two ago for an event. And that was a thought, I must say. You look at from one to the other and you think, the guys that were with them made a good case for their differentness. And one was a hybrid and one was a NA car and one was a V8 and one was a V6. But in the end, you look at them and you think, well, not sure which one I'd choose because I just haven't got a clear vision of that. Mm. Whereas you're right about that. Yeah. That's a really good point. I wonder what they'll do about it.
I don't know, but I think it's a perennial problem for them.
You
know,
it always has been, don't you think?
I think it always has been. I think the difference between a 650S and then whatever came after it, and then the 720, and then a 750, and you know, a 572 to an Artura. I think the Artura, because it is hybrid and V6, is the most different to the others.
Yeah.
But still.
Yeah, but it's not noticeably small or anything.
No,
like that,
and part of it is because I think of Ron Dennis, or plus it was designed by a company that has been used to racing for a long time. So they go, well, it's a McLaren, so it's got to have a carbon fibre tub. Yeah. It's got to have an engine in the middle.
Yeah.
It's got to be two-seater, really. It's got to be a two-seater. Yeah. And there are only so many different ways you can make one of those cars look and behave. And they still, you know, they go, oh, no, it's different because the base model, whenever it was the 570, that doesn't have any active aero, and it doesn't have the really expensive bodywork, and it doesn't have one or two other things, the 720 or whatever it was at the time. But we're talking really niche stuff, I think. And you see it in, I think they've got some quality issues. You see it in the residual values, you know, compared to Ferrari's residuals, which are stronger, I think.
Yeah,
you know,
very.
I think it's a problem for them, really. And I think it has been a problem for them, and it continues to be one.
Yeah.
Which is a shame, because they're phenomenal.
I was just thinking about, while you were talking, that Aston, do you remember they had a problem for a while where every Aston looked the same?
Yeah.
And they sort of got out of that a bit, I think. And maybe they're showing us how to do it. And also, by the way, because I've read what you've written, they've also moved further up the pole, haven't they? They've you know, if towards the ultimate, as it were. Mm. So maybe McLaren are on a trajectory, but I definitely accept that stuff about them looking, having a bit of an identikit look about
them. Yeah, yeah. I think it's a.
When they draft you in as CEO, mate, you can.
Well, you know, it's yes. I'll be sure to. Yeah, I'll be sure to. So it seems unlikely.
I wonder what your company car will be. Drive one of those as a daily, or whether you would, choose a Bentley instead.
Because of their various affiliations over the years, I think when they started Mercedes with the big company car thing, because they were the engine supplier to the F1 team. But I don't know, maybe the scheme has broadened out a bit since.
Yeah. You'd probably still go to work in a Landy, I bet you would.
I don't know.
As it drove into my backyard, I was reassured.
Reassured with the TD5 rumble. The problem with TD5s, as I understand it, is that the injectors eventually get a bit leaky. So when you turn them off, air gets into the injectors and into the fuel lines, And then it takes a very long time for the fuel pump to pump air back up to the injectors. So if you don't switch on the ignition and leave the car for a long time, you know, we were talking about Euro 7 emissions regs, which we're going to have to prep the car to be started and warm various things up before you could actually finally push the key and start a car. Well, an old Defender TD5 with 225,000 miles on it is a bit like that, because you have to sit.
So yours is actually suffering from this.
Yeah, and I took it over to the place that who repairs it now and again, and they went, oh yeah, the injectors let air in, and therefore eventually you'll have starting problems with it if you don't wait for the fuel pump to pump fuel all the way back up to the top of the engine. And it's the lower on fuel it is, the worse it gets, because the fuel falls back more easily into the tank. Anyway.
Is it money?
I don't know. But it makes it harder to nick. So I'm inclined, because if somebody just gets in and turns the key, it won't go.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
You just sit and crank it over. You know, if you see a video of somebody cranking up an old diesel generator or tractor or train for the first time in 30 years.
Yeah.
And eventually it gets going. That's what it has to do. So, yeah, well, you know, it's an anti-theft device.
Yeah, it's character.
But I will get it sorted. I will get it sorted at some point. Anyway, Steve and I are going to take a short break. We'll be back with more My Week in Cars in just a moment.
What car would you buy if you could buy any car? What car would you buy if you knew you could save thousands? What car would you buy if you could compare the latest offers from approved dealers? What car would you buy if you could do all of this in one place in just a few simple clicks? And where would you go to buy that car? What car? Car buying made easy. Visit whatcar.com to buy your next new car.
Welcome back to My Week in Cars. You can write to us, as Clive Acaster has done, to say, I want to talk about it, because this is a bit in your column, but Clive's letter is the same, on the same theme. I keep hearing about K cars for Europe, and as a lover of Japan, owner of a Suzuki Carry pickup tipper, and former Peugeot Ion owner, which is the same as the Mitsubishi iMiEV, the first K electric vehicle, I say, please bring it on. My 10-year-old Peugeot Ion was flawed with a heavily degraded battery, but I love the packaging, the visibility, the turning circle. It was brisk off the line. Way more of a car than a Twizy or a Citroën Ami, which, although intriguing, are simply not enough car. Let's talk about K-cars, Steve, because you talked about it in your column. The K-cars are the Japanese class of car that are within a certain size.
Aren't they? They're size restricted, and they fit parking spaces. Isn't there? I mean, this is all apocryphal, and I don't really know what I'm talking about, as usual. But I think it's if you have a K-car, you can get a parking space in your apartment building because it fits. Mm. But I just like the surprising variety of technology. They're all tiny engines and not very pokey, but they're all interesting.
Yeah.
And they go along. Also, I think Japanese were among the first to decide that what we needed was a lot of, or, you know, a pretty good smattering of equipment. So they had lots of instruments and all that. It's great. Brilliant.
Daihatsu Kore Avanzato TRX XR4. It's perhaps my favourite K car of all time. But that was a sort of four-wheel drive performance thing. Is the engine got to be less than 80cc or something like? And then the car's got to be within a certain... Caterham's most basic car, doesn't it? The 170. That is a K car. That complies with K car regs.
Yeah, that's right.
And
that's an 800, isn't it?
Yeah. And Clive says, what is the autocar recipe for just enough car? How big is just enough?
I tell you what, that's a really interesting question, don't you think? And isn't it funny? But people sometimes voice things that you've had in your head and you'd never really kind of fastened on. But I think about that all the time. It's why I like the 2CV. I reckon just enough car is somewhere around Kia Picanto territory, as you proved a while ago.
Yeah.
Maybe you could go a little smaller than that with was that a 1 litre?
I think it's a 1 litre turbo, I think. But my memory is
so it's quite
not what it was. Oh, it was fast enough. Yeah, I think they have just under 100 horsepower.
That's plenty of purpose. I reckon you could, just enough car is probably about 60, you know, if it's light enough.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think. I would have thought K cars were just about enough.
I reckon they're about enough. Yeah.
I find myself looking at the Daihatsu Matiz when I see one and thinking, that's a, you know, it's just a tin box, but it's great.
I drove last week. Yeah, it's a good looking car, isn't it? It's a weird sort of slightly, the original one with a little round headlight. Fell over in the autocar road test.
Indeed.
Yeah. Were you on the mag at that point?
In reverse, yeah. What happened was that somebody was at one of the test tracks.
Was it Longcross, wasn't it, I think?
Yeah, and he just needed to, you know, the photographer said, can you put that over there instead of where it is?
Hmm.
And he got in the car, reversed it quite quickly, put it on lock, and it just fell over.
Yeah.
And we subsequently found that others did the same. There were two or three in the market at the same time. So I'd say the gentleman with the Suzuki Carry tipper,
take care of reversing.
Just go slowly in reverse. Yeah.
What was it saying? Oh yes, I drove a machine last week called the Silence S04, which was at the Geneva show, I think.
I took some pics of it.
Hmm.
That's quite an okay looking car.
Yeah.
How quick is that?
Fast enough. It does 50 odd miles an hour. And it's 1.5 meters wide, and it's just over 2 meters long. And it's got two...
And the seats are cast into the structure of the car?
No, they do move, but sit slightly offset like in... the Citroen Ami, so that you get a bit more shoulder room. They do. And then there's two batteries weighing 40 odd kilos each, but they have their own inbuilt trolley, and you can take them out. You can charge the car via a socket on the car, or you can take the batteries out, wheel them into your garage, wheel them into your house, and you can charge them externally.
That's right. The bloke was showing me that just yesterday. In fact, that's the thing he's proudest of. And the same battery goes into their little scooter as well.
Yeah, that's right. And it's all made in Barcelona, which is cool. So it's European designed and built, which I like very much. And it's imported into UK, Silence UK, John Edwards of JLR.
Yeah, I looked for him yesterday. Now, he wasn't there.
Yeah.
It's annoying.
The UK...
he had the loudest voice in history. I went to the rugby with him once.
Yeah.
And he's a Wales supporter.
Right.
Honestly, he could be heard above the rest of the crowd. If there were 90,000 people, it didn't matter. Honestly, he was the Wales supporter. Unbelievable bloke. A really nice guy.
Yeah, really nice guy.
I hope they're doing well.
Yeah, we seem to be doing okay. They import the scooter and the... I think there's two scooters, and they're just going to start importing the quadricycle too. And I drove it the other day, and it does all the things that the Citroen Ami promises to do, it does. That's the difference.
So rides okay?
Well, I mean, it's a bit firm. But,
I mean, it's
fine.
Tolerable.
It rides fine, yeah. The only issue with the ride is that it's fine most of the time, but you know those speed ramps in the road that are squares?
And
in most cars, it straddles them, or, you know, on a motorbike, you'd ride between them.
Right.
So it's too narrow to straddle them, and it's too wide to drive between them. So every one of those is a bit of an ordeal. But yeah, I mean, it drives fine.
Would that be your minimum car then?
If the infrastructure supported it, because you can do, as they do in Barcelona, they do battery swaps. So the range is about 90 miles and it does 50 odd miles an hour. And if you just pulled into a forecourt, you just open the door, wheel out one battery, plug another one in.
Wow.
Do the same on both sides. You've got 90 miles in under a minute.
Wow.
So, I mean, theoretically, yes. The thing is, it's because it is battery powered, the batteries are quite expensive, and the car ends up at sort of 15, 16 grand, for which you can get a Kia Picanto. So that's its issue. But you're driving it, you sort of go, if the world was designed around cars like this, we'd be in a better spot.
Yeah.
You know, but it isn't. But also, you can't design a car around the world around cars like that, because people need stuff.
Yeah.
So you've got to have lorries, and therefore the lanes on a road have to be 3 meters wide.
Different,
and therefore, the fact that you have a car that's 2 meters wide, it doesn't save you any time to be driving in silence.
But I do like the notion of, I always talk about this, but you know, having you know, one in your household that anyone can use. You know, your mates arrive on holiday, so they borrow it.
Yeah.
Is it going to come to the UK soon? Or
yeah, it's on sale now. I need to finish writing the feature actually.
But, we ought to go and talk to John. Did you run into?
I saw John there. And chatted to him. And I think they think they'll do. You know, the business case is made on a couple of hundred a year plus some scooters, but he thinks actually they might do a bit more than that. You know, and to people who have motorhomes who put something on the back.
Yeah.
I mean, great for that. Really great for that. And if you just live somewhere where you don't have a lot of off-street parking, but this would fit and a car might not.
Yeah.
You know, and they're very, you know, they have no emissions at the tailpipe.
I was attracted, you know, I was just wandering about as you do, and I came across this thing, and it just looked nice enough to attract your attention.
Yeah, and it feels much more car-like inside than an Ami or a Renault Twizy.
There's a feature coming on this.
Features coming on this, yeah. It's got a heater, it's got air conditioning, it's got smartphone preparation, so you just plug in any phone and put it on the dash. It's got speakers built in. And it's got all of the things that an Ami doesn't quite have.
Mm.
You know, it feels small car-like inside. Mm. It's got quite a pleasantly finished interior, remote central locking, all the normal car stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That sounds really good.
Yeah. And you just think if we'd just taken a different path a couple of times over the last 30 years, 40 years, actually cars like that might make more sense than some of the path that we have gone down.
Interesting.
So, I say having arrived in a 2-ton, 2-meter-tall pickup, you know, truck.
That's an honourable exception to everything, Yolandi.
Yeah, maybe. Can we talk my column for a bit?
Because
the last time I saw you, you were about to go off and do something which is relevant to what I'm about to talk about.
I could fly.
So after I waved you off last time, I had a couple of drives over that weekend and the start of the week after, and it was half-term week, I think. And driving standards usually take a bit of a nosedive in half-term.
They do.
Because people who don't drive the rest of the year, or very much, they might go to they might go 3 miles to work and back, and then they go, right, kids, everybody get in the car. We're off to see Nan, 300 miles away. So they all climb into the car, and off they go. And they sit in the middle lane on the motorway, and they do 65 miles an hour and they don't quite know which lane to get in a roundabout, so they don't signal properly, and you know, maybe the windows aren't clean, and it just and they're distracted by shouts from the back, and it just
fights from the back.
I used to be sure that actually driving in the school holidays was nicer because there was less traffic, but it's just worse now, I think, because it's the roads are full of people who don't know what they're doing properly because they passed a test at 17. And barring renewal of a driving license once every 10 years, which is just a piece of paper, you don't have to do anything. You know, you just have to fill in a couple of forms. But nobody, there's no compulsion until your grandchildren say to you, Granddad, you keep driving into the garage door. Maybe it's about time that you gave it up. There's no compulsion to stop. You don't have to, nobody has to check anything.
No.
You know, you could start doing something not very well and continue to do it pretty badly for 60 years.
Get worse for
60 years, and then eventually maybe give it up when you feel you have to.
Yeah.
And it never used to... Because I kind of don't like telling people what to do, and I don't like the idea of governments telling people what to do. And I think if you've got a clear choice about whether to legislate something or not, just leave people alone.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, it's an obvious... People will rub along fine. Don't get involved unless you have to. But I'm starting to come around to the idea that actually maybe driving standards are so dismal at times.
Yeah.
People should, and the technology exists because everybody has to do a theory test before they pass.
Yeah.
Maybe there should be some kind of refresher that people have to sit through.
Yeah.
Once, I don't know how often.
I was thinking about this. I read it. Resonated with me when I read the story, the column, because I was wondering whether a way into it would be to say that you just needed a chit to say that you'd been with an instructor for half an hour to 1 hour or something before you got your insurance.
Yeah.
Something like that. Because I agree with you. If to have to go and queue up at some driving centre where there's already a huge backlog, can't be right. But they're but
you could just say, because like with our employer, we have to do a media law refresher every 2 years to make sure we don't see anything libelous on this podcast.
Yeah,
and then, but also, I have to do a refresher on how to sit in a chair.
Yeah,
you know, this is how you
look at a screen. That's the other one.
Screen. Yeah, this is how you look at a screen. I mean, I've been doing it for 40 years. I should be all right.
Not dead yet.
But yeah, now and again, they just go, look, this is how you should sit. This is how it is. And you could just, as we're very used to supplying our driving license details with a code, a check code for insurance or whatever, you could just every couple of years sit through a thing on the screen that just says, yeah, you've just been reminded about what lane you should be in, how you should signal, just some other stuff about, you know, how you would check some tire pressures and just some general stuff.
Yeah.
Just as a reminder. And I don't know if it'd have to be a pass fail or what, but just something that gave people a little bit of homework and made them have to think about it.
Just something you had to do, Well, the thing we were talking about is an aero club that I belong to. You can't fly their aeroplanes unless you just do a lap with Phil, the chief flying instructor, who sort of sits there like a bag of spuds most of the time, you know, sort of sighing when you get something wrong. But he just makes sure you can still do it.
Yeah.
And it's healthy.
Yeah.
And apart from anything else, you do, you know, I do find that I stick my nose in the books for half an hour before going to meet him because you think, oh God, I don't want him sighing too much.
Yeah. I'd better just do a bit of, better just check up on this. Yeah.
So it is, I think it's valid.
Yeah. I don't like telling people what to do, but it strikes me that if somebody every few years just had to do something because it just had to read a book for half an hour just to make sure.
Also, your point about clean windscreen and one of the steering committee's friends arrived here the other day for lunch having driven, I don't know, 80 miles. And I adjusted tire pressures in the car before she went home because there were all these warnings that had come on and there was nothing actually wrong with the tires. It's just that for the last 9 months, she'd been driving around on the same tire pressures, gradually getting worse. And, of course, seasonal shifts and all the rest of it. And, you know, there was a couple of tires of 15 PSI in them that had been, they'd lately been to Dover and back. And you think, this is, I mean, God knows how the car handled for a start. Mm. But anyway, I finished up. That seems to be my role in life, adjust the tire pressures of the wife's friends.
But yeah, I mean, that's something that could be in it, can it? I don't know. I think sometimes need a little tap on the shoulder, just go, you might want to, you know, I don't want to, you know, we're not being too, you know, too cross about it or anything, but just have a think about this. Because it is, despite all of this, despite the pretty dismal driving stats, so some really bad, and I think it was hard enough to maneuver around these people I was in a normal car. But imagine being a truck driver and having to contend with all of that on the motorway.
Yeah.
Just queue upon queue of people it's infuriating for them.
Also, I think truck drivers truck drivers are actually pretty good, I think.
Really and good. Really,
it must
really
infuriate
good.
Them
it
to
must,
see
it, they must
how
be
crap some
so,
people.
Yeah, it, I don't. I can't imagine how infuriating it must be. A reminder to car drivers to go, by the way, bear in mind how long these things need to stop and turn, how much space they need to manoeuvre at junctions and things. Because you just, I don't know. Anyway, that was my...
No, your point's well made. I think it's really well made.
How often do you have to do a little flying refresher?
Annual.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The licence requirement is annual, I think. But the main one for me is the aero club requirement. I don't have an aeroplane, so I fly the ones that you can hire. They've got five. And if you want to fly a new one, a new type, you have to be checked out on it for a start, which is requires a bit of messing about. But even for the familiar ones, the ones you know, I mean, I've been flying the same aeroplane for the last 33 years or something, but I still get checked out on it annually. And it's valuable.
Yeah.
I mean, as I say, Phil's famous for kind of sighing deeply when you do something wrong. But he also... He's just good at these sort of two or three word comments on what you've done. It's good. It's good for you.
Yeah.
And I think of it when I'm flying without him, I still think about him.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, that's interesting. Do you ever drive and think, right, I'm going to, for the next half an hour, I'm going to drive, or 10 minutes, 15 minutes, I'm going to drive in a manner which I would be expected to pass my driving test?
No.
Because I don't always drive in the manner that would see me passing a driving test.
Yeah.
But now and again, I think, would I have passed that test? If I'd done the last half hour with an instructor next, an examiner next to me, whether I'd have done that?
Yeah. The thing I'd do, I do try and drive, I do have periods of trying to drive well and thinking about nothing else and turning off the radio and all that. But the thing I try and do is minimize, when I, especially when I like the car, minimize control inputs. So steer less and less and you know, brake less and less and all that, you know, try and make everything as smooth as possible without actually slowing to a crawl. But you know what I mean? Just try and do, make every input economical and smooth and so on. I think you can train yourself to try and do it without thinking about it as well.
I particularly enjoy doing that in an EV, I must say.
Yeah.
Really like that.
Yeah, because the departure and the slowing down and all that can be so great, can't it?
Yeah.
You're right.
Anyway, despite all of that frustration, I looked up some stats the other day. The UK has the lowest, the fifth safest roads in the world, which is about on a par with Japan, just a whisker behind Japan.
Wow.
And I think there's only, I think it's Sweden, Norway and Iceland, which are better. And they have slightly different.
And they're surely not as densely.
No, they're not as densely populated. And I think
so we're probably doing pretty well.
We're doing pretty well, I think, considering. And to be fair, not all countries keep statistics. Uh-huh. But it's, I think 40 odd countries do.
Yeah.
And we're fifth out of those. And you would imagine most of those that don't are not.
Where I was born in Australia, right the driving standards were so variable.
Mm.
It was in the bush. And the bloke on the local radio, they would say when it was show week and everybody came in from the bush, all the people who were used to driving around the, you know, never saw another car, you'd get a warning on the local radio that there were going to be a lot of people coming in from the bush to go to the local show. So just be careful.
Just be careful. Just watch out. They're coming in. Also, I did see an Australian, a video somewhere of a car in Australia. And obviously they'd had a problem with the wheel or the tyre or whatever. So basically had replaced it temporarily to get them to where they needed to go with a hose reel.
Love it.
They just sort of wrapped some rope and stuff around it. I'm like, well, you know, because otherwise, if you're stuck, what are you going to do? Jaguar XEs.
Oh,
they're good, aren't they?
Oh, I think they're. Have you driven? Were you driving one recently? Somebody was.
No, I haven't driven an XE for yonks. Yeah, I think there was a bit in the first drive the other day. They? Yeah, somebody did a. Was there a new derivative or something that somebody drove?
But
no.
I think it might have been it's a bit of a pricing change or something like
that. Oh, maybe. Yeah. Somebody drove one, didn't they?
Good cars.
I think they're right, handling, steering,
size.
That stuff's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's another one of those cars that's lived a good life to me. You know, it's been out a few years and we became obsessed with it, with its behavior against the 3 Series at the time, didn't we? And, you know, 3 Series was always wonderful, and it is. But when looked at in isolation, and particularly with the prices now, I think the bloke that down the road here was paid 12K.
Yes, it says in your column, it is a £12,000 for a... Yes, for a... Oh, I've lost the bit of it in your column. I've got it in front. I had it in front of me a minute ago.
I think it was for a 250 horse petrol.
Yeah, with 30 odd thousand miles or something like that.
Yeah, not much.
And it was And am I right in thinking that Ian Callum said that because of all of the stuff it has to have on it?
Yeah.
The engine's mandatory crash.
That's
stuff.
It. Yeah.
This is as small. It's as small as it. Realistically.
Yeah, they really fought to make it as compact as they did.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, they even compromised a bit on rear package and so on, just to make it a really nice driving car. It's got sophisticated rear suspension and all that. Mm. I mean, when you're in one, you love it, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah. So, yes, 30,000 mile, 2018 P250 for 12.5 grand.
Yeah.
It's quite good,
eh?
Yeah.
He's a happy man.
Yeah, I bet. I've got a family friend who phoned last night to say that he's just bought a new XF trying to get rid of the old one that he's had for, because it's not ULEZ compliant, and he, I don't know what age it is, but it's a, I think it's a 3 litre diesel, and it's a pre-ULEZ, whatever that is. It's got 100 and something thousand miles on it. Local dealers offered him $2,000, which he's not going to take, I don't think. No. But anyway, blimey, I mean, what a lot of car for that much money. An extraordinary amount of car.
Yeah, and everything lasts these days, doesn't it? You know, the transmission will be okay, and the engine will be okay.
Yeah, be fine.
Even the shockers will be okay.
Yeah, fine. You could it's do amazing. Another 15 years in it.
Yeah,
£2,000. It's ridiculous.
That's what's going to happen, of course, isn't it? You know, those cars like that are just going to stay on the road and stay on the road and stay on the road.
Yeah, because I reckon because they're much better rust-proof than they ever used to be 40 years ago.
Yeah.
You can. Just keep it going.
Yeah.
You know, all the while the monocoques, right, you just replace bits.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't, you know, replace injectors.
Yeah. And they keep the local garage healthy as well.
Yeah.
And I believe in that.
Yeah, me too. Well, that brings us to the end of episode 77 of My Week in Cars.
God, 77.
We've got a few days in the same place this week, haven't we? We're doing a big EV test later.
Yeah,
this
I'm looking forward to Stormy's. Matt Saunders has organised it.
Yeah, which is good. So that should be cool. So I'll see. Well, so I've got a Cropley week this week, which is great. I'm looking forward to that.
It will be good. We'll have some fun, won't we? Because there's 10 cars involved.
Loads, yeah, maybe.
So there'll be all of us, you know, all the young blokes as well.
Yeah.
We've got a great retinue of young hooligans driving
proper
cars.
Road testers. Yeah, so it should be cool. So more on that. Probably next week we'll chat about it, and then the feature and video will be in the mag thereafter.
Are you doing a vid on these 10 cars?
Yeah, doing a vid on those. Yeah.
All right.
Some nice vids coming up soon, actually, because we've got that. And also, do you remember we did a fun EVs test last year? Which we haven't published the video yet, but that is now ready to go. So I'm going to put that out end of this week. The Fiat 500 and all that.
Malachi. A bloke just delivered a Cupra here just an hour or two ago before you arrived.
Yeah.
And I, in order to shift it out of my yard so there's room for your Landy, I bunged it up the street. And, you know, having driven it a quarter of a mile, it feels pretty good.
They pass the 50-yard test really well, don't they?
Yeah.
Because is it a Born, I take it?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so it's rear drive, isn't it? Which is, so the steering's really smooth.
Very nice. Also, great attack on the throttle, you know.
Yeah, cool.
No, I'm looking forward to having a bit of a mess around with these.
Yeah, me too. Meantime, you can find Autocar over at autocar.co.uk. You can find the full 129-year archive at themagazineshop.com. A reader wrote the other day and said, is it possible to take out an archive subscription without subscribing to the magazine weekly? And I said, well, I've been thinking about it. I think, well, technically, no, but if you think of it that the archive just gets bigger by one magazine a week, then that's how to think of it. If you don't want to subscribe to the new magazine, but you do want the archive, just think of it that way. That's just an archive that gets bigger every week.
Have you ever done sales in your life, mate?
Well, I'm starting to name it, yeah. And also, this podcast is available for sponsorship still, I think.
Hey.
Actually, I think if everybody wants to, you know, as well as the...
I'm enjoying it so much, I pay for it myself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Anyway, join us this time next week. Meanwhile, Steve, thanks very much.
Cheers, mate.